Welcome to Real Talk, Real Estate Discussions with Andrew Kirsch. In each episode, Andrew interviews industry leaders. We'll hear their real-time opinions on today's market, their background and unique career highlights, and guidance for newcomers into the industry. You can find this show at spillalkirsch.com and on YouTube, LinkedIn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more. Now here's the host of Real Talk, Andrew Kirsch.
Episode 30 of Real Talk. Well, those living in Southern California survived an apocalyptic Sunday. Not only did we have Hurricane Hillary roll through the region, we also had a 5.0 earthquake centered in Ojai, about 60 miles from Los Angeles. So an interesting day, to say the least, although most of the country would say what we experienced is a phenomenon called rain. This week on Real Talk, I have Bob Ruth, the founder of The Ruth Group, doing a deep dive into the office asset class. Bob has experience owning and operating office in Southern California, Phoenix, and Miami. He talks about how you can still make money in 2023 in today's market in office. He talks about the three top office markets in the country, hint, I'm sitting in one of them right now. And also the most important aspects to give yourself a chance to make money in office. He describes those aspects. He also talks about the differences between downtown LA and downtown San Francisco and why he's a believer in one versus the other. And finally, is office to resi conversion realistic? He gives his views on that, what we call a cocktail party conversation. Anyway, I hope you enjoy my conversation with Bob Ruth.
Hello, welcome to another edition of Real Talk. I'm here with my good friend, Bob Ruth, the president of the Ruth Group. Bob, how'd you come up with that name for your company?
We wanted something we could spell. Wanted to keep it real simple.
I love it. Well, Bob, thanks for coming on. You know, it's definitely interesting times in today's market, and you know, the Ruth Group focuses on office, the office asset class. But for my audience that may not know of you personally or your company, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Ruth Group?
First, thank you, Andrew, for having me on this show today. Fan of yours and have enjoyed working with you over the years, and you've done an amazing job for the real estate industry out there as a whole. But as far as the Ruth Group, we have been born, raised in school in Southern California, really focusing on high-rise office development, industrial, and some retail. We started a long time ago with a company called Thule & Company, developing a number of premier assets here in Southern California, and then sold that operating company to a company called Trammell Crow Company. Ran that for the Western area for another 10 years before starting the Ruth Group. So we had some people coming from Trammell Crow. We launched the Ruth Group and have been focused on office in Southern California, Phoenix, and Miami there.
And so as just to start, tell us your perspective on today's market. I know it is dependent on geography and an asset class, but you know, most specifically with respect to office, everything that we're obviously hearing in the media and experiencing in our own deal flow, but provide us your perspective.
It's an ongoing discussion, and the O word is a very, very nasty word these days. It reminds me of what retail used to be 10 years ago. And those that were very good and efficient at operating and developing retail have done very well over the last 10 years and turned it into a real darling again by focusing on the top 25% of the product. You know, so we look at office. Office is definitely there. Office is definitely coming back. There's 25% of it that's in great shape, 50% maybe in flux, and 25% that needs to be repositioned. And it's really about creating experiences and creating opportunities. And, you know, there are a lot of very good people looking at this opportunity right now of office. You know, it's just not the same anymore. Mondays are optional. Fridays are not there. But Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, most companies are coming back. and they're taking down office space. Whether they're occupying it or not is still to be determined, but they're slowly moving back to an office environment. And if there's a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday that has a cool vibe and the right opportunity, then you know, you can make something happen very quickly. But I think it's going to be a tough slug here for the next, call it 3, 6, 9 months between the haves and have-nots in the office space.
Yeah, and so I completely agree. I mean, my office is in Century City, and it went from, before COVID, a market that was not in favor, a market where vacancy rates were, I think, approaching high teens, to now sitting where we are post-COVID. It has become, at least in Southern California and Los Angeles, the darling of office submarkets, where you know, rental amounts, rental rates in Century City have never been higher, and we see a dynamic you know, office pattern, really because of a couple aspects. One, there is no homelessness in Century City compared to downtown LA, and two, you have this fabulous mall retail center that people can go and it's really the biggest amenity within Century City. And then when you expand outside of Century City, there are more challenges. So I guess what areas within office, both geographically and you know, the type of office, whether it's suburban, mid-rise, high-rise, are you seeing where the most opportunities will be?
That's a great question. Ironically, you're sitting in one of the three top markets in the country: Century City, Miami, and Park Avenue. And the beautiful thing about Century City, it brings me back to a story way back when we were developing and trying to acquire the Century Plaza Towers. My toughest argument with our capital partners was trying to sell them on the fact that Century City would become the West Side place to be. The challenge was access. Lack of transportation, lack of freeways.
Yeah.
And therefore heavily criticized. But it was really Goldman Sachs who made the first breakaway from downtown LA and made the move to the West Side. But when you have the high-end homes in the West LA, and you have what's really important now, safe, clean, and amenitized areas, they have a tendency to flourish. Those are hard to find in Southern California right now. So if you look at Century City, I think it will do very well short-term and long-term. But it's all about having the right people at the right place in a safe, clean, amenitized area. And Century City has become, or has become, the golden child for office space right now. The rents there are literally double what you'll see in other major markets for Southern California that you would think would do well. But it has a number of the social ramifications that have impacted those markets, unfortunately. And the real shame of that is it's easy to fix. We just need strong leadership and government to do the right thing for the majority of the people that really care and make a difference here in Southern California.
Absolutely. I mean, look, we could take this conversation so many different ways. I mean, first, you talked about essentially the 3-day work week, right? I shouldn't say 3-day work week, 3-day in office work week. You know, I'm a consumer of office space. I currently have 14,000. Hopefully my landlord's not listening. No, he's a good friend, Bob Held. We currently have 14,000 square feet. We don't need 14,000 square feet. We probably need half of it. Mm-hmm. We do see that pattern where we are most, not busy, but most people are coming to the office in those Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays. But how does a tenant, I guess, justify paying the same rent that it's used to paying for 3 days of occupancy?
It's all about recruiting and culture at the end of the day. That's what's bringing most of these people back to the office space. In order to grow a company, you have to create that culture and be able to recruit. And recruiting in the old days meant that the tenant was really responsible for creating that environment inside the space. Today, we've pushed it on to the landlord. It's really our obligation as the landlord to create that experience, to that makes coming back to the office not an obligation, but an opportunity. And if you can make it work that way, people will lease and lease very quickly in your space. But it has to be, as we mentioned earlier, safe, clean, and heavily amenitized. Amenitized is an answer that comes up, you know, or a discussion that comes up on every office project. And it's very different for every market and or opportunity. So it could be things from dog parks, operable windows, special air, amenities from fast casual restaurants, not just white tablecloth, but fast casual, things that people can actually eat 3 and 4 days a week there to really make a difference in a project. But you can't put lipstick on it. There's some developers that do it very, very well. You know, Hudson Properties, people like that, they're really students of the game when it comes to understanding and developing office space to make a difference.
Yeah. So let's talk about a couple of markets specifically. So downtown LA, you know,
the next.
Yeah, next. So a couple months ago, before ULA kicked in, you had the Union Bank building sold. I would assume it was a record low number in terms of price per foot. The building that Chris Rising owned with Lionstone, I'm forgetting what they called it, but that recently traded. We've seen reports of the Aon building possibly trading and others, all at, you know, numbers that on a price per foot level, I don't know when we last seen those numbers. It's been quite a few decades. How does the office market in downtown LA, and I'll expand it to other markets like downtown San Francisco and the like, how can they come back?
I think San Francisco always comes back, just like Manhattan always comes back. So San Francisco is a very, very difficult place right now. But there are a lot of very smart minds up there and companies that have changed hands or are repositioning today. Those smart minds will come back and retool and reinvest in some point in time in San Francisco. Downtown in Los Angeles, a different story. You really have to look long and deep into what you might call an office market in downtown Los Angeles. The beautiful ramification, if there is one from downtown Los Angeles, is that a number of tenants are fleeing from downtown into other locations, which are pushing market rents and occupancy in other locations, like Century City. Yep. Law firms are coming to Century City. Other fire-type tenants are moving to Century City. The rents in Century City are going up to the point that some are moving from there to other locations. So Century City is the net winner for all of this in this cycle, but there are a number of other areas in this market that are going to benefit from the downtown craziness. But
yeah.
Again, it goes back to safety. If people do not feel safe in downtown Los Angeles, and as long as we have those ramifications or issues in downtown Los Angeles, it's going to be very difficult to justify leasing office space. There are tenants that have been there 30, 40, 50 years that are leaving downtown. It's just very, very unfortunate. Again, it's self-inflicted, which is really, really tragedy.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, going through, you know, I know we were mentioning before we got on the podcast that I was in London and Paris the last couple of weeks, and you know, obviously there's homelessness everywhere, but I feel like those cities have done a good job of, you know, whether it's more social services, but you did not see the homelessness that you see in downtown LA. You do not see the graffiti, the crime, just the dirtiness that we see in downtown. I used to work in downtown LA in the early 2000s, and it was thriving, and so much money had been generated into and spent into downtown LA, starting with Staples Center and then the Arts District and beyond and beyond. And it is a shame because it is one of the I mean, so many victims and from COVID, but downtown LA has been hard hit. You know, one of the other factors that I feel like has not been talked a lot, and it really has impacted law firms and their ability to move to Century City, because it used to be you know, the big law firms were in downtown LA because they needed to be near the courthouse, and the transactional firms and the entertainment firms that didn't go to court as much were in Century City. Well, coming out of COVID, judges don't want 200 people in and lawyers and clients in their courtroom every day for 30-second status conferences. So they are conducting their calendar on Zoom. And then it's just the real substantive motions or trials that are occurring in person. But so now 90 to 95% of the activity in a courtroom is happening how you and I are talking on Zoom. And so the lawyers don't even have to go to downtown LA because they don't need to be in a courtroom.
Well, the homelessness is another topic that could go on for some time. But, you know, if the homeless issues are addressed and or the homeless individuals are not creating crime, it is not going to be the type of problem that I think drives people out of downtown.
Yeah.
The issue there is security and safety. And with the craziness around security, people are not comfortable sending their spouses to downtown Los Angeles right now. The ramifications are real. So Century City is clearly a darling and a net winner for those type of issues.
And it doesn't just impact office, it impacts all the smaller retailers, the dry cleaners and the coffee shop and everyone else, that the lunch spots that benefited from having hundreds of thousands of people come into downtown LA on a daily basis.
If you take though the rents, let's assume that you pick up a building at a very, very reasonable number and you can undercut the market there and bring your rents down significantly in that market, the tenant improvements at $100 to $125 a foot don't justify the rents. With operating costs, they're still up to $18 a foot, plus or minus. So at the end of the day, it's very difficult to make it work as an office building in downtown Los Angeles with the lower rents. So lower rents are not the answer.
And what is?
Don't buy downtown.
Well, I'm glad you're not serving as the president of the Chamber of Commerce for downtown LA, or you wouldn't be doing a good job. All right, so let's talk about the Ruth Group and the your legacy assets, how you're dealing with the evolving aspects of office, like we're talking about the higher interest rates, you know. Lowering of rental rates and vacancy challenges. So how are you dealing with it as a company?
Well, the big misnomer is that for the right project in the right location with the amenities, safety, and security we talked about earlier, the rents are not going down.
Mm-hmm.
Century City rents are not going down.
Sure.
Net absorption is up. So that's part of that 25% we're talking about at the top of the stack. Those markets, those assets are doing very well because people want to be in those areas with people of like mind. So it's really the bottom 25%. And I'm not sure that we want to get too close to that. That would be an asset in a place like downtown Los Angeles. So it could be an asset. It could be a market. It could be a combination of the two. But, you know, some of these properties just need to be repurposed. And there are some alternatives out there. But the flip side is some may have just be torn down. They will not be office buildings going forward. Very, very difficult.
Well, let's talk about that. I do want to get more into the Ruth Group and how you're looking at certain deals and your investor base and things of that nature. But of alternative uses of office, one of the most common ones that are floated is adaptive reuse or transitioning them into residential. How realistic is it to convert an office building to a residential use?
It's great for cocktail conversation, very difficult to implement.
Yeah.
The biggest challenge initially is usually the floor plate window line to the core is usually too deep to get the number of windows required for a residential unit.
So what does it need to be in order for there to be, or what's like the maximum, I guess, window line to core depth?
That really varies on the type of units or the size of the units you're trying to build out for.
I see.
And or the market. Most do not want a bowling alley
right.
design. So that's the first issue. The second is then structural issues. When you put that much plumbing and you have to put all those special things on the floor, it puts a different demand on the floor itself that wasn't probably structurally designed initially for that property. So those are two issues that usually come back to eliminate most of the office buildings. And Gensler, the architectural firm, has a wonderful program that if somebody's interested in looking at a conversion, they can put it into their model and show you very quickly what does and does not work. They did a study in Boston and took 100, and I think it was 180 buildings. The net was down to 11, and only three with the basis would work.
Wow.
In Boston. So the odds of that conversion are very, very slim and difficult to execute because of the cost basis.
Yeah. Cocktail conversations for sure, but implementation much, much more challenging. All right. So in terms of the Ruth Group, how do you capitalize deals? Do you, through a fund model, through joint venture models, syndications, what is your, preferred, method of capitalization?
Good question, because every project's a little bit different. We do not have a fund. So it's either passing the hat with friends and family or to private equity and or an institution. So mm-hmm. we have three different levels or tiers that we work with. In some cases, it's a combination of two in there, but just depends on the type of asset.
And so what kind of conversations have you had with investors about new potential transactions and their appetite to invest in office?
All of the institutions that we're a part of or close to are out of the office business right now. They're sidelined. They're usually the first ones out, the last ones in. Mm-hmm. The private equity groups and some of the larger ones will be probably the first ones back in. When you look at the KKRs, you know, the Blackstones, people of that size can move very quickly back into a market as they do when they exit a market. But they're opportunists, and there are projects that are coming along now of size with a low enough basis in a market that has legs, that I think you'll see some trades moving forward towards the end of this year. But the momentum probably, you know, a year plus from now before we start seeing a lot of activity.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. The Union Bank transaction, despite its, you know, it a price per foot, it still was a $100 million plus transaction, was purchased by a private individual. I have a client, and this was publicly it was published in the trades, a transaction also just pre-ULA of about 270,000 square feet of office here in adjacent to Century City in Beverly Hills, completely vacant, private individual. Self-capitalized. And those are the types of buyers who are picking up these assets on a low basis because, like you said, the institutional world is out of the market for office. So if you are seeing an opportunity that has all the factors and dynamics that you're looking for, from being safe and amenitized, or you can amenitize it, but you like the bones and you like the basis, who's the investor base or the investor profile that is willing to partner with you?
Right now, the family offices are still active and there's some 1031 money still available. But that will dry up here soon. And I think the family offices will run, you know, the interim market for us with buildings like the one we talked about downtown. There are a couple others trading like 707 Wilshire that you mentioned earlier. Again, same concept there. And it's probably a very smart move for some of these family offices to pick them up because they'll hold them long term. Sure. Their basis will be very different. And they'll be able to massage it and look, you know, like heroes 10, 15 years down the road. Mm-hmm. But there are properties working through the system right now that are dropping to a low enough basis that it's starting to get some attention. And if it's in the right market, I think you'll see somebody step up. Of course, there's some trading with, you know, big numbers in front of them. $200 million equity checks. And that's going to be very difficult to justify in this market to try and get that over the line. So we see a lot of seller financing available. Yep. That's another challenge. We're talking about equity here, but this financing is another piece. So sellers are offering financing for 3 to 5 years of term their interest only to help soften the blow. It is a very, very thin pool, but the family office market is the strongest right now for buying. I do think private equity will be right behind them. And when they come in, the market will most likely be ready to turn.
And so I see you sitting in front of a beautiful office complex on your screen. For those that are watching us through YouTube or other platform that they're accessing the video as opposed to just audio, is that an asset of yours?
It is. We acquired this actually from Blackstone. It's 500,000 square feet of office space and two towers. There was on a 12-acre site. It had a very large field in between. We bought it unentitled, and it's in a market. It's Torrance, but it's Los Angeles address down there. It's on 190th Street at the intersection of the 405 freeway and the Harbor Freeway. Mm-hmm. The big challenge in this market was lack of amenities. I mean, all the brokerage companies were basically based on 190th and in this project back in the day, but moved up to Rosecrans because of lack of amenities and therefore difficult to recruit. So we built a 25,000 square foot fast casual restaurant environment between the two towers to help support that need and added quite a few amenities to it. Again, during COVID, this project now has leased over 260,000 square feet at rents that are higher than where we were going into COVID by adding the right amenities and making it a place not only for the tenants, but also for the community. So it's been a great, great win all the way around for that environment. But when you do that, it's fun to watch the tenants come back. You know, there's a lot of things going on at this project. We took the lobbies and we put large barn doors in, and we did that with every one of the retail spaces. So the entire center is open to the indoor-outdoor environment. Before COVID was cool, and now we have this opportunity with a park-like setting for people to enjoy and take advantage of.
Oh, that's incredible. When did you buy it?
We bought it just about 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Unentitled.
Wow. Yeah. Unentitled. So how long was the entitlement process? Now, was the entitlement process through Torrance or City of L.A.?
City of L.A. But it's like a lot of things in life. When people want something to change, it goes pretty quickly. We bought this in 6 months. We had a shovel in the ground. I've never seen it. We've developed a lot of products in our life, projects, and I have never seen like it. But it's been a groundswell for the community, a groundswell for the tenants, and really a win-win all the way around. It helped clean up a number of things in the area and has really made a difference for this community.
Incredible. So at the outset of our conversation, when you said you also do retail, is it retail that's complementary to your office product, or do you purchase retail independent of office?
We try to do things that complement our office, whether it be multifamily, we have adjacent site or additional land, retail in this case, and then do industrial independently. Although I will say we purchased another building down the street from Blackstone. It's a 220,000 square foot office project that was scheduled to be an office project. And a year ago, a year ago, we started receiving offers that are well in excess of what we purchased it for. So it's now going to become an industrial project as being entitled to the city. So.
Oh, wow. So let's talk about industrial, because, you know, my dealings with you have been more focused on office. Mm-hmm. Big of a portfolio does the Ruth Group have with respect to industrial and similar asset classes within industrial?
We've developed a limited number of industrial projects, but as you know, my background with Trammell Crow, we developed quite a few industrial projects throughout Southern California. And sure. Trammell Crow has been a driving force for industrial for a number of years.
And so how about converting office to other commercial, non-residential uses, whether it's data centers, whether it's some type of industrial use? Have you looked into that?
Yes, as we are down the street. The beauty of that is we're taking a 220,000 square foot office building down on an 8-acre site and putting up 150,000 square foot industrial building with all of the latest, you know, state-of-the-art type issues for industrial, with a 2-acre parcel available for trailer and container storage, or the IOS. Mm-hmm. With that, it makes it very easy to develop. So it's a by right issue now. It's zoned properly. So when we take down 220, we put 150 back up, we go right into working drawings through the city with building and safety. So DOT's on board, building and safety's on board, planning's on board, and it's much easier to get through that process.
And so as you're looking to do deals over the next, you know, cycle, 6, 12, 18 months plus, are you focusing more on development opportunities, or, you know, adaptive reuse, or, you know, just turning, through a value add, opportunity of existing office? Where will most of your focus lie?
It's really on the, opportunity. So if we can find it right at the right price, we can develop ground up, we can reposition, or we can buy, you know, fix and flip.
Yeah.
The challenge for us are really, I used to say, we try to quantify environmental issues and entitlement issues. Today, I'd also put in structural because of some of the challenges in the city of Los Angeles for structural. So be very, very careful with anything in the city of Los Angeles right now, as it relates to development and some of the challenges there, moratoriums that are coming through and other things that might impact an industrial project. So, and then of course we have the mansion tax on top of that, that adds a whole nother layer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, looking at a very large project in the Southern California area, that's outside of LA, there to reposition right now. Then we have another one in Miami.
Oh, I'm sorry. What do you have in Miami? Just one other.
Miami is two office buildings and a hotel down there to reposition.
So how Miami, did you?
It's just a whole different world down there. It's when we talk about the issues we deal with here in Southern California versus Miami, it is so refreshing. It's not that they don't have problems; they just deal with them. They have strong leadership.
Yeah, no, they absolutely do. It is a different world from LA. And so are you going to focus more of your efforts outside of LA and outside of California in markets that are similar to Miami, like a Dallas or other markets that have, you know, a similar, you know, similar attributes?
Right now it's Miami and Southern California, if it's office. We just believe in both those areas. Ultimately, if we can find the right project, right pricing, we can reposition and make it work. It's nice to have tenants. It makes the world go around for us in the office business. And with the migration from the Northeast coming down to Miami with real money, real resources, demanding better service, better restaurants, better everything, it really makes it exciting to be part of that fabric in the community down there.
Yeah. Do you have a local partner there, or are you able to develop and operate these projects by just commuting back and forth?
We have people on the ground from Los Angeles that are relocating to the Miami area down there. Right. One of the challenges for us in Miami is the level of service, and we need to find a way to drive that up for the folks that are coming from the Northeast that are expecting that level of service. But it is very exciting down there for a number of reasons. And there are a lot of people that move from here to there that have experienced it.
Yeah. Is there a concern in Miami of an oversupply of building similar to what happened, you know, leading up to the GFC, where Miami was, you know, one of the first and hardest hits, because, you know, their entitlement process is a lot easier than Southern California, and therefore you can build a lot more. Do you have that concern?
Well, there are definitely a number of projects going in Brickell. Mm-hmm. And there's residential scattered throughout that region. But if you break down the micro markets, Brickell's rents for the new tower coming out of the ground now are up to $200 a foot.
Wow.
That's per month.
Wait a minute, $200.
No. Okay, no. I just wanted to see if you were paying attention.
I know. I'm trying to do the conversion because I know here in the West Coast, we do it by month. So, but $200.
$200 a foot, yes.
Uh-huh.
And so with that type of push and lift, you know, the outlying markets have been well below, you know, 25% of that. And so with the push now, that's a new tower coming out. Brickell rents are clearly well below that, closer to $100 a foot. But with the new push in the high-rise tower there, for a private equity firm coming out of a place like Manhattan, it's the right place to be. mm-hmm. but you're going to push a number of the local people out to some of the outlying areas. And there's a great, great opportunity to pick up some of that. If you take, you know, everything from Palm Beach and swing it all the way down through Miami and up to Coral Gables, there's just a lot of good things happening down there.
So am I going to find Bob Ruth relocating to South Florida anytime soon?
He'll be spending a lot more time there.
Yeah.
It's exciting. It's really, there's a lot of energy and good energy down there.
Sure.
Doing the right things.
Just not between June 1st and say mid-September.
Right.
As this we talk
to be right here, right now, we travel all over the world to try to get what Southern California has today.
I mean, we were complaining because we had what, 6 or 8 months of unseasonably cool weather, and clouds and rain. And, I think anyone would take that over, you know, 95 degrees and 95% humidity.
Right.
Yeah. Look, it's, there's a lot of markets that have opened up to the eyes of real estate operators and investors really because of COVID and you know, different political tendencies and just ease of doing business and getting things done. And, you know, I just feel like the folks that have run our city here in LA, they take all of us for granted because of the weather. They don't think we're going to move. They don't think business is going to move. And the records speak for itself. And if we don't wake up and fix the problems that you've been articulating in 5, 10, 15 years, this area is going to look a lot different. And I just hope we're not falling asleep on something that could be really detrimental. And I don't know how we'll ever come back from this.
I think the challenge is in the taxes. There are a lot of people that are willing to pay what I would call a resort tax to live here. It's security, it's schools, it's basic needs that are really becoming challenging for a lot of people to live here. And if people are threatened at gunpoint or home invasion or you know, a spouse is dealing with some challenging issues and there's nobody there to help them, it's going to be a tough decision.
Yeah, no, it certainly is. I can't leave this podcast on a downer note. So we gotta change the tone. Yeah. And I know you're a big USC guy. Yeah. Let's talk college football for our last minute or two here. So I'm a Northwestern guy. Man, this is rough. I never thought I would be embarrassed about my university and my. I knew I'd be embarrassed about sometimes the performance on the field, but not the university and what's going on. So let's not talk about Northwestern sports, but let's talk about USC. I know you're a big USC fan, and so what's your outlook on this year's season for the Trojans?
I sit next to another guy from Northwestern, as you know, and Scott Shepherd.
I know.
So I listen to the Northwestern story on a regular basis. My mom also went to Northwestern, so we have a lot of Northwestern here. They've done a remarkable job over the years for a school that size.
Yeah.
That's an incredible place, and there's a lot to be proud of. But we go through cycles as we have at USC. I do think this year is going to be a big transition year for us in the right way. And next year will be telling. You know, we're going to go spend a lot of time with the big boys next year.
Oh, so you're finally recognizing that the conference that you played in for the last 100 years has been inferior, and you're finally going to play real sports with the likes of Michigan, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Penn State, and Northwestern. If we even have, even if we have an athletic department, the Big Ten may be less one university when you guys join us.
No, I think it's going to make things interesting. And some of it's really unfortunate because a lot of schools are going to get left or will be left in the sidelines here. There's some schools that just will not be able to compete with the new NCAA rules. And I think that's unfortunate because the local rivalry was a big deal and a lot of fun for everybody in the community.
Yeah. But
now when we're stepping up, it's about money and power. And the schools that can figure it out, I think, will do very, very well. We know who those are.
Absolutely. It'll definitely be interesting to see the Big Ten coming into the Coliseum and the Rose Bowl for years to come. Well, Bob, you're always gracious with your time, and I appreciate you coming on to the show and giving your insight on just the office market and the landscape in general, the real estate industry. And just thank you for coming on and providing that insightful discussion.
Well, thank you very much, Andrew. It's always fun to spend time with you, and I appreciate the opportunity.
You got it, Bob. All right. Take care.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Real Talk, Real Estate Discussions with Andrew Kirsch. You can catch prior episodes at scholarkirsch.com and on YouTube, LinkedIn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more. Thank you for your positive reviews, comments, and for sharing the show with others.